Okay, so thank you. So the so what let's see, I mean the title is indeed enumerative geometry on an Enrico surface. And I assume you don't know what I mean, you don't need to know what an Enrico surface is. But so if you take type 2 compactifications and you want to have n equal 2 in 4 dimension, then you need 2 covariantly constant spinners. Then you need 2 covariantly constant spinners. And if you look what this condition means, I mean, in fact, you need also a Kähler manifold, which already reduces the holonomy to S to U3. So let's also, I mean, this is a threefold, of course, because you have three dimension. And then you find that actually the holonomy group of this manifold M is SU3. And it it can be a subgroup of SU3, but not any subgroup. So either it is really SU3, or there is another notable exception, that it is SU3, SU2 times Z2. And today I will mainly talk about this exception. So the other case is the standard Calabi-Yau case, and this exception is something which is relatively interesting. So it's called sometimes barely Calabi-Yau, because it almost makes it to be a Calabi-Yau, but it's not a generic case. So how do we construct this exception? So we start with K3 times T2. And if you like, you can represent, for instance, this K3 in a particular way. So you can write it as a branch cover of degree 2,2 over P1 times P1. So that would be the P1 coordinates. And that gives gives a particular K3. And if you now mod out by a set 2, which actually acts on this coordinate y as u, the other one are invariant, it maps it to minus y minus s minus u. And if you look at the holomorphic 2,0 form, then this is of course given by y. you take this coordinate and take the residuum, and then you get ds wedge.
Can you explain what this notation is?
This means basically, I mean, you will notice if you write the elliptic curve in the same way. So what it is, it's a branch elliptic curve is a branch covering in 4 points in
so you mean fourth order polynomial.
This is a b degree fourth order, and this is, so to say, homogeneous coordinates of p1, and this is a homogeneous coordinates of the second p1. And here you have, so to say, just one P1. And that is an elliptic curve, and that is, gives a K3. And so the particular thing about this K3, why I mentioned this, is because this allows this Enrico's involution. But this was shown by Horikawa.
I'm still being a little bit dumb here. So is this sum of fourth orders in SN?
So you write one hypersurface, mm-hmm. and it has degree 4 in S and T, and degree 4 in U and V,
so
all terms.
So degree 8 total.
Well, I mean, it's B degree 4, 4.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is that's the notation. So basically what this gives is a one-dimensional subspace in this space, and over this, this guy is branched, like the Riemann surface is branched over 4 points.
And the something like S to the 4th, T to the 4th times U to the 4th.
Exactly, yeah. And it's, so to say, important that you write down enough terms, otherwise this action will actually be non-free, so you can
if
make
you
it.
You want to write the formula, because he's saying the wrong thing.
So basically now is you can write something down S, U to the 4, and so on. Such terms you can write. and all monomials of this type, and you have to write, so to say, enough of them so that this thing is smooth. Yes? And once you do that...
you have to have elliptic vibration, right? Where's the elliptic vibration here?
Well, I mean...
You need one more variable, I'm confused.
No, I mean this... why you need the elliptic vibration?
Like y squared, I mean, elliptic curve is y squared is x cubed plus ax plus b, and a and b could be polynomials of some p1. So for the lower one is k3 or something? I'm a bit confused.
No, this one is k3, and this one is just elliptic curve.
Oh, s and t are not homogeneous variables?
This is homogeneous. So it's an elliptic curve.
This is the elliptic curve, not k3.
No, this one is the k3. This is the elliptic curve.
Oh, actually, I thought you were right.
I just wanted to explain that this is the same idea than this idea.
So this is just the k3, right?
So this is the k3, which is the double cover, and this is the t2. And so you can write now this. So you have to keep the others as well. So you can write down this v0 form in this way. This is just analogous that you write your holomorphic 1-0 form in the elliptic case as ds over y t, right? So and now if you I said you already how this acts on the k3, and I have to say you how it acts on the torus. And actually, it acts also as y goes to minus y. But I want to actually to write it in the following form. Take the torus as being c2 divided by some lattice. And then you can write the c coordinate as being the coordinate of this c. And then you write just that sigma acts on z by inverting z. So that is maybe here an easier way to describe it. And the upshot of this is that this thing will have four fixed points. So it has fixed points on the torus, but since it's free on the k3, you get a free involution on the total space. And you can easily see once you have folded down to this, so this has a topology of a P1 then, and you have over this P1 you get four special fibers. All other fibers are K3 fibers, so these are the Enriquez fibers. And the other fibers are K3 fibers, but if you go around in the base, around one of these K3 fibers, you get the monodromy, which is actually this...
T2 fibers.
The torus. So if you make a pass in the torus around one of the singular fiber, you induce in the fiber precisely this Enriquez involution as a monodromy. So it's a fiber ring with a monodromy, and you can also see easily that the deficit angle at each of these points here is actually pi. So now you can see how you generate actually this part of the monodromy, because if you take a vector and transport it around this point, then you invert it, by this deficit angle you invert the direction in the base, and the Enriquez involution inverts the direction in the fiber, so the whole vector is just flipped. And of course the SU2 part of the holonomy is just the one which comes from the curvature of the K3.
So, if I understand correctly, any path that closes one of these fixed points, you get the Z2. And
that's right.
You just get the SU2.
Right. So that explains how the monodromy comes along. And now, why I'm looking at this model? So, it has a couple of nice features. So, first of all, it features very prominently in this heterotic type 2 duality, and this was actually the paper by Ferrara, Harvey, Strominger, and Vacha. I don't know when was this. This was long ago, 96 or something.
Five.
And then it's also a sort of, in mathematics literature, it's actually even earlier. There were papers by, at the geometric construction, there were papers by Voisin and Porquer. They give a general construction, basically taking a Z2 on the torus and taking one of this Nikulin automorphism on the K3, and they get Calabi-Yau, and this is actually a very nice realization of mirror symmetry, because you have a simple operation in which you can flip the Hodge number. So it's a well-known construction. But our aim is essentially to solve the topological string on this example. On this M, so M is the total space, and why I'm thinking that this that it has, so to say, a little bit of a better chance. So so it's somehow between the n equal 4 case, which would be if you just take if you just let away the set 2, and the n equal 2 case in the difficulty. So it has, so to say, part of the non-randomization theorems from N equal 4, but it's slightly broken so that you get non-trivial things which are typical for N equal 2. And then it has also sort of, if you look at the field theory, low-energy effective field theory, then it has actually a conformal spectrum. So this is, so to say, inherited from this n equal 4. So you get either SU2 plus adjoint at the enhanced symmetry points, or you get SU2 plus NF equal 4. And then it has this beautiful heterotic dual, which actually helps quite a bit. And that is because it's in particular a K3 vibration, and and then it has a u-duality group, which is relatively simple.
For those of us who are ignorant, can you just remind us what the heterotic dual is?
This I will have to say in great detail, actually. Okay. So I will get to that. So. So it has a simple u-duality group, and there are a lot of other motivation. For instance, Mark Gross has looked at the topological SYZ conjecture, which is actually proven for this case, and this is probably also the case where you can make it the real SYZ conjecture for Lagrangian vibrations. So it has a lot of nice features, and which makes it special. But on the other hand, one should also stress it's not so special because it sits so fat and nice in the modelized space of the K of the whole Calabi-Yau. So if you make a transition, you get to a Calabi-Yau which has instanton corrections of all type and is generic. So it's of course connected by transitions to the big CU modelized space. Now, maybe as one more motivation, I mean, it turns out that these compact cases are really by order of magnitude more difficult than the non-compact cases. So let me just give a little bit of an overview. What works for the compact case, what kind of methods we have, and what fails. So if you have a non-compact case, then basically everything works. Then you have, for instance, in the A model, so if this is, let's say, has some isometry, so it's toric, then you have localization, which works and gives you all genus answer. And then you have more beautifully this large N techniques. So this works. and then large N works, and this basically means because basically works because in the A model we have a very simple and distinguished brains which we can use, and so if you have a more complicated situation, the best tool is maybe this vertex, and then in the B model, large N also works beautifully, so you have a matrix model. And you have integrable hierarchies, which actually are related to the matrix model, and of course they go over to the A model. And then finally you have also BCOV, so holomorphic anomaly. Which also works. So all these things basically plainly work. In the non-compact case, in the compact case, this works actually at genus zero. That works, but for higher genus it doesn't work. And this has to do that actually if you take this modelized space and you try to restrict it from the ambient space, the map from the ambient space to the hypersurface, the virtual dimension jumps up, so it's higher than the maps in the ambient. So the ones in the Calabi-Yau can be higher than the ones of the ambient space, and that makes it very difficult to actually make this program of perfect obstruction theory work. So in this case, it doesn't work. Then large N, there are some ideas, so to say, to make the vertex work for this Strominger-Sassler-Yau vibration as studied by Gross, but we don't know whether this works. And then generally, matrix model, we don't know. Integrable structure, we think it's true, but on general grounds, but we don't.
The position, I thought these techniques are found very from the invariants, etc.
Relative Gromov-Witten invariants can also work. This is a surprisingly ugly technique. I mean, general Gromov-Witten invariants.
Yeah, I thought the claim was, for example, Quentin and not Quentin.
Yeah, but I mean, So basically, the idea is to generate the quintic and then to take general a relative Gromov-Witten invariant. But as Rao said, I mean, this is not going to give many answers. So I mean, in principle, it could work. It will work.
The claim was it's computable, but maybe.
It's so to say. relative Gromov-Witten invariant. So this was suggested by Gapman, I guess. And now done by Panria Panda, this could be a technique which actually leads to the solution of the A model, in a way which, however, is unpractical. I would say it would never give something that you can study serious or anything like that.
This is possible,
right? So BCOV is actually something which more or less works. I mean, but you have this problem of the holomorphic anomaly. And at least you get series in one direction, but you have a very hard time to get all genus. You get it's easy to get the curves in all in all directions in the Kähler cone, but to go to higher genus is very complicated. So for this reason, I think it makes sense to study some simple case, or maybe not so simple, but.
The N equal 4, so if you just take K3 cross T2, then you can do everything.
No, I mean, that is actually a good point. I mean, in some sense, then these amplitudes just vanish. But so to say, very roughly speaking, the idea is in this business to lift some zero modes in a mm-hmm. clever way, so that you can some mileage out of this N equal 4. So this is a bit similar like in this flux things, where you recycle the instanton calculation for various amplitudes.
But if you cross C2 has only genus 1, which is non-zero.
Right. So, but nevertheless, there are techniques on K3. I mean, in particular, the ones by Strominger, by Yao and Zaslow, which of course are useful. And so let's keep this heterotic type 2 duality going by just writing down the key structure, which is this lattice. So if you take this lattice is of signature 22.6. So this is, let's say, heterotic on on T4 times T2, and then it has this Narayan lattice, and this so to say splits in a lattice which is of signature 9.1, and then another signature which is of lattice which is of signature 9.1, and it has a hyperplane lattice and another hyperplane lattice which I call S, and this I call G, and then it has from the torus this gamma 2-2 lattice. And so this is
everybody knows what all
this means. So this is these are just lattices of a certain signature, and what this lattice precisely mean I will just say in this, here. Let's put it over here. So this lattice of signature 9.1 is actually E8, and I make a minus 1, so that's basically the inverse, the intersection number is the inverse, the negative Carlin matrix of E8, and then the hyperplane lattice is just the lattice which is like this, has the metric like this, and so this gamma 9.1 is actually this lattice. And this is the normal lattice for the compactification on torus, momentum, and winding. And and you can see that this guy, so to say, that is what mathematicians like, this lattice. So this is the lattice 19.3, which is responsible for the intersection number in H2K3. And then this one contains, in addition, so this I have a string for, because a string theory suggests actually to treat it in a similar footing than this lattice. So it contains H0 and H4, and that's what these lattices are. So now you can actually calculate what the Enriquez involution does on this lattice, and you can basically take this this curve that I have. That I have had on this blackboard, you degenerate it a little bit so that it becomes two E8 singularities, and then you look explicitly what it does on the singularities, and you see that it actually exchanges these two E8s. So it will do the following if I call here some momenta. So these are momenta in these lattices, and now I have to tell you what this Enriquez involution does on this momenta. And first it gives a shift, and this shift is Pi delta, and it works on this lattice, P4. And then it permutes the first two entries, so these two lattices are permuted. They must be, so to say, that is the reason that I have can only write down a special case re, because it has to have this automorphism. And then on this lattice, it has a minus. Then this it leaves invariant, so there is this shift in this lattice, however. And this one, it has a minus again. So this is this this is this lattice, and how the Enriquez involution acts on this lattice.
What was the
I? So this is a shift vector, and the shift vector is actually in this HS, so in this part of the lattice, and it has the property that delta squared is 1. And in fact, if you make the orbifold, then you see that the level matching would not work if you don't have this shift. So it's is actually necessary for the consistency of this of the theory. And now you basically claim that since you know this this heterotic type 2 duality on this one, you claim that it commutes, or you suspect that it commutes with this set 2 on both sides, and then you get a new duality between the models we are interested, which have then an n equal 2. Which lead to n equal 2 compactifications.
So perhaps you want to mention that the action on the momentum on this lattice is fixed by the action on the K3 cohomology and the action on T2.
Right. So in this, is precisely the Enriquez. You can look what the Enriquez induces on the cohomology, and then since you have this minor set on the torus, you have precisely this action here. You have to invert the minor.
So only non-obvious one is that phase.
So the phase is you only discover if you know very well how the orbifold construction works, and it has actually something to do with torsion classes in the geometry. That was studied by Paul, I think. So now, what is?
Question: Can one just to get some idea? So on the T2 that you have in the heterotic cell.
So this one is here, right?
So on that, basically, it acts the same way as on the other side.
It actually acts everywhere the same. I mean, you can really read off the action. That's what Kammon was pointing out. So if you know that it's Enriquez on the K3 and
there isn't a K3 here.
Well, there is a K3 because this is the cohomology of the K3. So this is H2 K3, and this is actually also H4 K3 and H0 K3. So there is a K3. So it's just you have to induce the action on the cohomology and then you see it. So now you can see what this lattice, the invariant part of this lattice is on the Enriquez surface, and so this is easy to see now. So you're basically in this where you have these permutations, you take combinations like this, and therefore you get this 2 here in the intersection form, and and then you get this also in the H part, so you get here also an H2 in the intersection form. And then you get an H. So this I call the lattice which is plus, which means has positive eigenvalues, and it has this same lattice with negative eigenvalues. And here you take, for instance, for P1, you take just this combination that makes the 2. And So in particular, in this lattice, there are this H20, H01. Remember, I have shown you explicitly that this form, this was, so to say, one of those calculations. I took an element in H2, namely the 20 form, and showed you that it actually is anti-invariant. And so that is one of those actions on the cohomology. And here is H0, H4, and you see the mathematicians would actually not have this lattice because they don't count it. Of course, they just are interested in H2. But from string point of view, it's very suggestive to write this symmetric. And in fact, you can show that this K3 is mirror symmetric. So remember, on K3, mirror symmetry acts a little bit funny. So if you have this K3, then You basically it should act by reflection on this axis, but since this one is, so to say, invariant, you have to make a distinction, and you make a distinction by a polarization of the K3, and it transforms the transcendental cycles and the holomorphic cycles into each other. So that is what mirror symmetry does. So it makes basically this. So if this is the Hodge diamond of a K3, and this is the one of this particular K3 because the polarization is so that it has 10 holomorphic cycles and 10 transcendental cycles.
So, I mean, mirror symmetry simply
mirror symmetry is
moves you in the moduli space.
Well, I mean,
takes a K3 into a K3.
It changes the polarization, so to say, for the
K3. Is it taking, if you look at the moduli space of K3s, is it relating
to points? Yeah, I mean, K3s are also special because the complex structure is comes in an orbit,
right.
So you can, so to say, rotate your complex structure.
So does it rotate it at a point in the moduli space, or does it move into a different point in the moduli space?
I mean, you can, if you change your complex structure, you can go to one point from one point to the other. But if you, so to say, stay with your complex structure, you cannot.
So you're physically, K3 changes or not?
Physically not. It's basically a question.
So it's just a
diffeomorphism. It's really Nikulin has studied this in great detail. It comes up if you try to embed the K3, for instance, in something, because then you make a choice.
But at the level of the K3, it's just a real diffeomorphism, non homomorphic.
Right. Right. So and the on the T.
It's just a notation. Yes.
So on the T2, I can write this recover the elements. So I write the holomorphic 1-0 form and 0-1 form like this, and then this volume form like this, and then mirror symmetry, of course, exchanges. This one with this one and this one with this one, and now you can also get the counting for the Enriquez surface. So you have here, for instance, let's do this. So you take these guys, and you get one from here. And here, and then you get 11 from this one, and here the one, and then from this one and this one, and then you get 11 here by Poincaré duality. And if you take this pairing, you get the other axis. You get 1, 11, 11, 1. And of course, the reason that you now get back with your 3-0 form is that this is minus, and this is this is minus and this is plus, and so you can combine this and this, for instance, to make something which is invariant. So this is the Hodge structure of this manifold M, and since you can prove, actually Bosera proved that this one is mirror symmetric, this one will also be mirror symmetric, since the torus is mirror symmetric and you combine it with something mirror symmetric. So this is exactly mirror symmetric. So it's not just that the Hodge numbers are equal, but the whole structure of the two moduli spaces is equal. Okay, so let's write shortly down what we want. So what we want is, of course, what Sergei was also mentioning yesterday. We want a full perturbative answer for the harmonic string, and so we want basically F lambda t, which is a sum over all the genus, and then lambda 2g minus 2 f t, where this f t is a sum itself over the classes in H2 of m z with some basis, and then it's it has some numbers which are labeled by the genus and this class beta, and this is formal expansion in Q beta, and this Q beta is essentially product of you can write degrees to specify this class, and then you have e to the minus, let's say, t d. So this specifies a particular class in this H2 lattice, which has also to be in the Kähler cone, and then you get this expansion, and this is the Kromov-Witten invariant. So this one you want to know, and if possible, of course, for all directions in this Kähler cone. So in this case, in this 11-dimensional Kähler cone.
So one comment. So there was this phase action on the hydraulic side, and if I remember correctly, this was non-perturbative from the
right.
Wilson line of some kind, if
right.
I remember correctly, on the type 2 side, which cannot be seen to any order in
this. It cannot see in this, and that therefore.
So therefore, are you coming to that?
I ignore it for this talk. I ignore it because
but
I cannot see.
What I want to point out is before you do anything, it's clear that the hydraulic thing has more information than that Wilson. That's what I want to point out, because on the hydraulic side, you're including that phase, perturbative data on its side. You're including that phase which is not visible to all the other right. perturbation theory. Therefore, if any data depends on that phase,
I mean, maybe
you're going to miss it. Although it's extreme perturbation.
Maybe theory. You can sort of say comment later because we I think I mean there's a point. I think this okay. comment comes natural. So now this we want to calculate this in the first step actually in the hadronic string and you have to, in order to do that you notice that there is a part in the effective action which is actually a term, so it's integrated over Minkowski space and it's a term which is T dual, let's call it photon field T 2g minus 2, so this only works for g greater 0. And then it's r minus veg r minus, where this is the Riemann the Riemann tensor and here now this f g t bar appears. And the relation between this FTT bar and this F, which just depends on T, is that you take some base point, so you take this topological T, and you take a limit T bar goes to T bar naught, and then you take this F TT bar, and if you make this correctly for instance, this expansion, then you will find the topological Gromov-Witten expansion. So this is the distinction between these two quantities, and essentially we first calculate this whole quantity and then we take the limit. So now how do we... So this one is... this one was the... This is the anti-self dual part of a Grabi-photon field. So this is in the in this Grabi... gravity multiplet, and this is the anti-self dual part of the curvature, and this Fg is just some moduli dependent quantity which appears in the effective action and is supposedly, by arguments of supergravity, you can calculate it exactly, and that's actually at one loop. There are no other corrections than one loop, and I want to make now a one loop calculation, and this will actually lead to, if you are too impatient, to relatively nice modular functions and stuff like this, and that will then give the enumerative predictions for this Enriquez surface, of course.
The fact that you just have one loop that's inherited from N equal 4.
That's right. That is that's not true. I mean, this for N equal 2 is as well. Actually, in N equal 4, this term wouldn't be there.
So that's not the one loop.
Well, there's also things to R to the 4, right?
There too,
R to the 4, I think. Is.
Oh, by one loop. Okay, you mean it's one loop?
Yeah, I can write down the loop.
Okay. It's not G is one.
Yeah, I mean, the relation between... Yeah. We're talking about hadronic, and we may even talk about field theory, right? I mean, okay. So if you want to do this in field theory, you just take one loop, and you take this... this fields. Sorry, this.
Maybe you want to explain why it should be one loop in the hadronic side.
Well, this is because of non-randomization theorems of supergravity, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. More precisely, the coupling constant in the hadronic string is a vector multiplet.
Oh, so you meaning that the series doesn't contribute? So, right. So Kamrum opened in. Discussion which I haven't mentioned too much, but it's true that everything which happens in the fiber is so to say perturbative from the point of view of the hadronic string, and if I in particular the degrees that the base would appear in this expansion would give higher contributions of the dilaton, and this is one which has it not, so because I look at the fiber, so therefore I can calculate it.
Used results of the physical hadronic string to compute things of the topological string.
That's right.
Which is the opposite of the usual way one presents the topological strings.
Well, I take whatever helps, basically. I don't... So you try to calculate this amplitude. There's a couple of things that you can remark about this amplitude. So first of all, it's BPS saturated. I mean, that means, I think people call this 1/2 BPS. I'm not sure about this. But anyway, the states in the loop must be BPS states, otherwise this doesn't contribute. And then you can actually classify these BPS states by the off-shell quantum number. So you have an SU2 right and an SU2 left. And it turns out that only this left one couples to all this stuff because it's anti-self dual. And the right one, so this right one gives just the degeneracy. And this degeneracy is just its spin. So if you take this right spin, then you get the representation content of this of the right spin, and then you get a minus one to the J3R. And in particular, if you have, so to say, some spectrum which comes from n equal 4, this would be this one, then if you evaluate this, this gives actually, this kills the contribution. So such a state would not contribute in the, so if this is the right spin. in this thing, so that would give actually kills the one loop. So, well, I mean, now you can do this. I mean, this is just field theory, so I haven't talked about what these BPS states are. So, but since you know the heterodic string so well, you can basically figure out what they are. And that's the next step. So this is some very nice things by which were done by Garba, Narayan, and Taylor. So basically what you have to calculate is the following integral over the fundamental domain, because you're doing this on the torus. So you take t, and then you make this measure somehow nice. And actually, it cannot be made too nice. this factor. And then you have here some expression, which basically is a sort of it's not a partition function, but rather an index. It's a little bit like an elliptic genus. So if you look at what this amplitude does to the states, if you look at the zero modes, you see that it projects actually to the left zero modes, and then the rest is... So it has a sort of the flavor of trace R and then FR, F left, minus 1 to the F left, and then the full stuff. So there's a certain projection, so it's like an index, which actually contributes. But let's write it first down what it is. And now this set int that you is the one that you can calculate now from the internal theory, from this orbifold theory, and it's the right moving boson on the torus to the 2t, to the 2g, and then this evaluated in the internal sector. And now, as I said, so it's sort of an index-like quantity, so if you want to remark something about it, it's this index-like quantity. And you can, of course, get such things if you have the full partition function. There are also some tricks that you don't calculate the full partition function, but the partition function is relatively complicated, so it's safer first to calculate the full partition function to check its modularity and all this stuff, and then to specialize. So so we have done this. This is basically a relatively ugly orbifold, so I shouldn't spend too much time with it. So it's because it has this permutation and this shift, so it has various complications that such an orbifold can have. But so you do what you always do. You define twisted sectors, which have, B means the twisted boundary condition, and A means the insertion of the group element on the Hilbert space. and then you sum this over 0 to 1 because it's just a set 2. And well, now this gives some modular functions. Well, I mean, this gives some blocks which give a modular function. And so something which is quite typically is that that the 2 appears, because if you make this trick with the permutation orbifold, it's nice to just double the tau, and then you get some things. This happens in this case as well. And anyway, this expression you should in detail better look at the paper. But one thing which I should probably mention is this Narayan Tedder function, because this will have the lattice, and from the lattice we have to get the information how the Picard lattice looks in this case. So there will be a Narayan Tedder function, and this now is labeled according to the twist sector, so it has various, because you have the shift embedding, so you have also things in this lattice. And so this is a Narayan Tedder function. And, and then comes something from the fermions. I think I should be rather brief about it. Yeah. So let's do all this. So you get then an integrand for this FG over there. And this integrand I will... so this integral, let's call this IG. And this is, so to say, this index. Basically, if you calculate the index...
And
now is, yeah, this is a good question. So is this integral computable? So what you do about this integral? So now things really start. So there are various methods, and actually the best one method is to guess it. And that's not impossible, because you know the modular group very well. So let's note what the vector moduli space actually is. So it has this part from the dilaton, and then it. So this is just modding out by the maximal subgroup, and then it's the discrete group. Yeah.
Sorry, what is IG down there?
Well, I mean, this really gets into deep technical details, because this is what you have to do is you have to write down all this stuff carefully, and then you have to take the index, and once you have done this, you get a function which looks completely horrible. I mean that, but has some nice modular properties.
So these are basically the roughly the partition function of the Harvey
developer
states, right?
Right. So it's roughly you project on the one ground state, and then with an F
right.
In addition, and then so that is what it is. But of course, in this orbifold, it's quite a complicated expression. And if you would like to know it, then
simple question. So IGs obtained by substituting this DAE into a previous expression for.
Yeah, evaluate this expression that Antoniadis and Narayan gave you, and then keep in mind that it's a projection on this ground state. Take from the partition function the contribution that is not projected out, and that's what it is. You have, of course, you have the torus, you have the Enriquez part, and the. Well, this is just the fundamental domain, because you're integrating on the torus, right? This is a one-loop amplitude.
So is the module for?
Of course, because it's world sheet torus, and it has SL2Z.
Yeah, that's
not. Oh yeah, yeah. That. I mean, that's actually a way to calculate the integral. I will comment a little bit on this, but so again, you mod out by the maximal compact subgroup here. And then you have this this beautiful discrete group, which is an invariant of this invariant lattice, right? So this is this lattice of signature also to 10.2, and now it turns out that actually Borchertz has for some reason constructed a modular form for this lattice, and so. Well, I should say the following. I mean, you do this for F1, then Borchertz has constructed. So then Borchertz comes in, and so he found such a form. So you know also a little. I mean, you know a little bit about this form. So you have physical requirements. It has to be of a weight 4. And then it has to. I mean, also you know at the you know a little bit about this enhancement point. So you know that the zeros are simple zeros, and you know roughly the discriminant where they occur. And okay, and so you the Borchertz form is strikingly nice. So it has a product form. And so now this coefficients actually are also coefficients of a SL2Z invariant form. So basically this is R and Y are roughly speaking things which live in a lattice which has vectors in this 10, so it has a P, and then it has in the 8 lattice, and then it has M and M which live in this hyperplane set lattice which makes this this lattice, and and so you
M and M are one dimensionalized or two
dimensionalized? These are these H factors.
Each one is an H, but
yes,
each is a
two dimensional vector. So then you write this down and as I said, so basically you have a scalar product in the, I mean you have a lattice product, and you want that this is positive, this product.
So when you say R positive, you mean R dot Y positive? Is R dot Y is also a vector?
Y is basically an element in gamma in R9,1 plus C. So this is a positive cone in this lattice. I mean, basically, the idea is that these things become the Kähler classes.
What do you mean
of
by R positive? R is a vector. What do you mean by R being positive?
Well, I want the norm of R with respect actually to another vector.
Oh, R squared is
yes.
Positive. You mean?
Yeah.
R squared.
Right. Sorry. Right. You're right. So so now the this D itself are. So the dn are itself functions of a modular form. So this is q minus n product 1 plus. So now Harvey and Moore say basically this is the one loop result. It has had to have something to do with the curve counting on Enriquez. So this turns out to be wrong. So even so, I was tricked for a long time by this statement. But it's very simple. If you are guaranteed to get the right modular form, but you're not guaranteed to get it at the right cusp. So when you have a modular form and then obviously this is an expansion which converges in some region. So it's not true. It's not true.
It's not F1.
Hmm?
You mean this is not F1?
Well, it is F1, but in wrong coordinates. So if you well, it has to do with well. I mean, that's the point we should probably discuss more.
Draw a picture or something.
Yeah. Right. I mean, so it's basically this. You have this ten-dimensional modelized space, and what they have developed this at this cusp, and they give this form that was Borchers did, but you need it at this cusp. So I mean, it's as simply as that. So that is so to say Borchers, and that is what we then calculated. So actually, this this was with Marcus. This project with Marcus Mourinho.
How could it be that they got the, you mean the Harvey and Moore didn't do the integral and just...
No, they guessed. I mean, that is so to say, this is so to say the only thing that you can lose in this leap of faith. That I mean, you're guaranteed to get the right function because it happens that this weight 4 ring is unique with these properties, but you don't know where you get it, and they got it at a point where it's not.
Oh, I see. So they got the right object.
So the object is and well, let me now come to this. So Harvey and Moore got the right function, but the wrong region.
Is this modular form related to the FZZ bar?
This modular form
lives inside
is basically in a strange notation F related to F1 TT bar or ZZ bar. I mean the coordinates. I want, of course, essentially coordinates which are good to compare with the Gromov-Witten invariants at the end. But so anyway, in order to get the higher G's, you must somehow do the integrals. That is unavoidable. And that is now really complicated. So I give you an example of what happens.